This is People's Tribune Radio. I'm Mike Thornton. On this edition of PTR, we look at the potential U.S. war against Iraq and try to get an idea of what's happening inside that country. With such diverse voices and viewpoints as that of Richard Becker of the International Action Center.
If we look at the estimates by military experts about Iraq's military power is today, one thing they pretty much agree on is that Iraq has... And these aren't our military experts, they're the government and the institutes and so forth. But Iraq probably has about 30% of the military power maximum that it had in 1990, prior to the Gulf War.
And former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright.
I stand down to no one in my fight against Saddam Hussein. I spent 8 years doing it. But I think we did manage to isolate him. And I think that the timing of what we do should be our choice.
And we'll hear other voices and views as well. People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also published the newspaper, People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. We begin our look at the Iraq situation with Richard Becker, co-director of the International Action Center. Becker looks back at what was being said about Iraq's military strength at the beginning of the Gulf War some 12 years ago.
We were told at that time that Iraq had the fourth most powerful military in the world, that the U.S. should expect 50,000 to 60,000 combat casualties. The actual result of the war was that, according to the Pentagon, the U.S. had 153 combat deaths in the war. Iraq had lost between 150,000 and 200,000 people. It's a ratio of 1,000 to 1. It's not reflective of a real battle, but rather of more reflective of what the Gulf War really was, which was a kind of high-tech slaughter from afar. Since that time, when Iraq's military was smashed to a large degree in the war, it was the most inspected country in history. I mean, it's really something to hear Bush talk about how Iraq has not fulfilled this and it hasn't fulfilled that condition. Well, for 8 years, they went along with these weapons inspections. They had some objections. The Iraqis had some objections to some of the things that the weapons inspectors wanted to do. Like, they came in, and people, this is just not known except, I think, by people who went there. They would go into the university and burst into classrooms where there were science classes going on and demand that they be allowed to interview every student and examine all the laboratory work that was going on. I mean, they went everywhere, and at some points it caused some clashes, but generally Iraq went with the program for 8 years. So it's the most inspected country. Huge amounts of weaponry were destroyed. Scott Ritter has testified, who was a chief weapons inspector, about this. So now you have a country that, as far as we can see, has no missile that can go more than about 90 miles, and that's pretty much everybody agrees. And the countries that surround it have all emphatically, I mean, 90 miles can only reach the surrounding countries. And the countries surrounding Iraq, the ones that are, you would think, well, they are the most threatened if Iraq is a big threat, including Saudi Arabia, Iran, Syria, Jordan, and even Kuwait, have all spoken out against the war. Iraq clearly does not pose a threat to the United States. There's no link that's been made, although President Bush wants to associate Iraq with 9-1-1 in the minds of the people. No link has been made, and you can bet that they have expended all possible resources to make that link. To argue that Iraq is a danger is a ludicrous argument. And in fact, if Iraq had anything and were to use it, to launch some unprovoked attack or something like that against somebody, the vast power of the U.S., they know very well, would be brought to bear against them. And that was made very clear during the Gulf War when so much destruction was done. And now we've had 12 years where Iraq is a far, far weaker country than anyone would have estimated it to be back at that time. For people who have actually gone there, and I've gone a couple times, I went in 94 and then I went again in 2000, both times with Ramsey Clark. And when you see what's happened to Iraq, because you can not only go and see, you not only see the suffering in the hospitals and the poverty that's gripped the country, but you can also see that that was very definitely not always the case, that Iraq had very modern facilities and everything has... all the basic systems collapsed because of the sanctions, which is really, as Samuel Berger, the former National Security Advisor, put it, the most complete blockade of any modern country, of any country in modern history, and it's been enforced by military means, by the U.S. Navy primarily, and it has just wreaked devastation. And the thought of a new war against a country whose people have suffered so much is really kind of beyond description. I'm not a supporter, politically or otherwise, of Saddam Hussein.
Over the last few months, there's been a daily drumbeat for a U.S.-led war against Iraq. On today's People's Tribune Radio, we get several views of this potential war and the situation that's happening inside Iraq. In addition, we'll look at how all of this focus on war is affecting working people in the United States and what one community is doing in an attempt to foster peace. Richard Becker is a co-director of the International Action Center, an organization founded by former Attorney General Ramsey Clark. The IAC has long opposed any war against Iraq, as well as United Nations sanctions that have been imposed upon the country.
The point the U.S. government brings up is to answer the suffering of the Iraqi people by saying it's not their responsibility. But we have to know this is the same government that was in place before the Gulf War and before the sanctions. These were not the conditions that it's the same regime. It's the Ba'ath Party. It's not just one person, Saddam Hussein, but it's a party that is the governing party in that state. And the point, I think, is also this, is that one of the things that this government did that I think made the United States very unhappy starting back in 1972 was that they nationalized not only the oil fields, which is a kind of theoretical thing unless you take the next step, which they did in 72, which was to nationalize the oil company. Then the revenues began accruing to Iraq, and Iraq underwent an extremely rapid process of development, perhaps more rapid than any other country ever, I believe. And now, today, it's the government likes to throw around this idea to people that the oil for food money is used by Saddam Hussein, who they always want to single out, this one individual, like no one else lives there, used for his palaces and weapons and luxuries and anything else he wants. Well, it's important to know that the oil for food revenues from Iraq's sale of oil, since that program went into effect in 1996, not one penny of that money has ever made its way into Iraq. It all goes into an account of the Bank of Paris in New York City. That bank account is owned by the Security Council. The way the money comes out of the account, 40 to 50% goes to pay other expenses, like all UN expenses having to do with Iraq, reparations from the Gulf War, which mean reparations payments to the big multinational corporations, oil companies particularly, and others. The money that's left only comes out of the account when contracts are unanimously approved by the Security Council representatives on a subcommittee called the 661 Committee. And over the past several years, while more food and medicine have been able to get into Iraq, so that situation has improved somewhat, what the U.S. has blocked, according to about 3 months ago, $5 billion in infrastructure contracts that are needed to repair the water treatment, sewage treatment, and power systems. That is the main cause of death in Iraq today, and particularly the cause of death for children, because they're dependent on those rivers, Tigris and Euphrates. They don't get much rain, and they're not able to either clean the sewage properly like they were before or purify the water sufficiently. And that's the main cause of death, and this is very well known in Washington, and it is Washington that is mainly the main one blocking the contracts. But I just want to emphasize these infrastructure repair contracts. But I just want to emphasize, because it's so often misrepresented, that Iraq receives exactly zero of the money in cash from the oil for food.
Former U.S. Secretary of State and United States Representative to the United Nations, Madeleine Albright, was in Sacramento, California in September. Several years ago, while serving as Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright made a controversial statement during an interview on the CBS News magazine program 60 Minutes. Iraq had been under United Nations sanctions since the end of the Gulf War, and an increasing number of reports were saying that thousands upon thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of children were dying as a result of those sanctions. When asked by Leslie Stahl if the price being paid to keep the sanctions in place was worth it, the Secretary of State said, yes, she believed it was worth it. Since that time, two United Nations directors of the Iraqi Oil for Food Program, which operates under the sanctions, have resigned in protest, saying that the sanctions are a sham and that they are killing innocent Iraqis. I asked Madeleine Albright if she still thought the sanctions were worth it.
First of all, I think everybody needs to remember that there is no embargo on food and medicine. There never has been. There always was the possibility for the international community, as well as Saddam Hussein, to use some of his oil wealth to buy food and medicine. And the sanctions, whatever is wrong with them in terms of the people of Iraq, is not the fault of the United States or of other countries. It is the fault of Saddam Hussein. He has always had the possibility of following out the rules that are laid out in the Security Council resolutions, and he has not done it. The statement you're referring to is one that has plagued me all these years, mainly because it was a very long interview, and I think this has happened to many people. You finally give up after you've been asked the same question 50 times. It was a statement I wish I hadn't made. And I think that there isn't anyone that I've ever talked to who can say they never made a statement they wish they hadn't. But I do think that the sanctions have been a way of keeping Saddam in his box. And that's why I have been questioning the need to have military action right now, because I think we have been able to keep him pretty much contained, and I believe that our main goal is what President Bush said earlier, which is to fight terrorism.
Much of the controversy and problems regarding Iraq since the end of the Gulf War some 12 years ago has centered on the issue of UN weapons inspections. Scott Ritter is a former UN weapons inspector who was in Iraq.
It seems clear to me that a decision has been made to remove Saddam Hussein from power and to do this using American military might if required. Now, on the surface of it, one would think that in order to undertake a step of this nature, you would have to have a serious threat to the national security of the United States to justify this. No substantive fact has been put on the table to show that Iraq is indeed a threat to the national security. So I feel that this is probably more to do with domestic American politics based upon a decade of demonizing Saddam Hussein. We've boxed ourselves into a rhetorical corner where the only option available that seems that's politically acceptable is the elimination of Saddam Hussein. And we have many congressmen, Democrat and Republican alike, who have committed to this course, invested considerable amount of political capital into the concept of removing Saddam Hussein, and they join the Bush administration, which especially since September 11th has raised the level of war rhetoric to such extremes that, frankly, no other option is even tolerated. The administration is not providing a full picture. The media is not providing a full picture. I think America is being misled as to what the potential threat is.
Ritter referenced the demonization of Saddam Hussein. I asked the former UN weapons inspector if Saddam Hussein had become expendable as a demon because of the emergence of Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda.
No, I think the opposite. I think al-Qaeda jumped into our national consciousness so horrifically on September 11th that the Bush administration has used the war on terror and this concept of the need to confront all threats to drag Saddam Hussein into the umbrella of the war on terror. Prior to September 11th, George Bush would not have been able to get any support to go to war against Iraq. Since September 11th, you know, the majority of the country, according to polls, supports going after Saddam. And one of the reasons is they buy into the rhetoric that Saddam Hussein's Iraq is a threat possessing weapons of mass destruction, and that Iraq is linked to the forces of anti-American terror, in name Al-Qaeda. Now, no one asked for proof on this. They just accept this at face value, and the Bush administration is taking advantage of this ignorance and the fear that exists in this country.
At her September news conference, former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright also addressed the issue of an Iraqi linkage to Al-Qaeda.
I personally have not seen proof of the fact that really Al-Qaeda is in Iraq. I think one of the things that the administration has tried to do was to link what was happening in Afghanistan with Iraq. And I think one of the questions that people are asking is really for some more specific proof about that. And I think our main issue continues to be what is happening in Afghanistan and problems that we see in Pakistan. And I think by linking all of this, we're making it, there's some assumptions that at the moment I have not seen verified.
Richard Becker of the International Action Center.
9/11 became, I think for the most right-wing and militarist elements in the government, it became the opportunity for them to take control and begin implementing their program of endless war and immense military buildup and attack on civil liberties and civil rights and so forth. And they say they do it to protect the people. But on December 21st, George W. Bush was interviewed by the Washington Post for an assessment of his, you know, for how did the first year go as president. And it's in the December 22nd Post. They did the interview the day before, and he replied to the question, "All in all, it's been a fabulous year for Laura and I." Which I think is a pretty amazing thing to... I can't think of anyone that I would know personally who, if you asked them, how's the last year been?
Right.
103 days after September 11th, their response would be, fabulous. Just been a fabulous year. And I think that gives us a little insight. You know, there's a lot of Bushisms, but I think that's more than a Bushism. I think it's an insight. It's an insight into this grouping or how they really feel and how they really see things and this kind of cold, hard... attitude toward the world, and they come out and tell us that, well, they got to do all this, and we got to support them because it's all for our own protection. I don't think they're really that interested in protecting the people here or the people anywhere else. I think what they're interested in is furthering what they see as their own interests and the interests of those who they represent. And I think the Bush administration, more than anybody, represents the oil, military, banking industries, kind of, and some of the others, and their program is a very negative program for the vast majority of people. I mean, it means get rid of the environmental regulations, get rid of union rights, get rid of free speech, and get rid of all the social programs, and gear everything toward a war that Cheney, the way Cheney put it, was may not end in our lifetime. A more chilling promise, no, I don't think any leader could make to their people.
You're listening to People's Tribune Radio. I'm Mike Thornton. Perhaps the opposite of the type of program that Richard Becker was just describing is a program that's scheduled to take place in the first week of October in the Sierra Foothills community of Nevada City, California. Some of Nevada County's most talented and prominent musicians, artists, and activists are organizing the event, which will be broadcast live on KVMR-FM. Mikhail Graham is one of the core organizers of the event.
Well, on October 2nd from 7 p.m. till Thursday morning, the October 3rd at 7 a.m., we'll have a sunset to sunrise peace vigil. It's called Awakenings. And it came from an idea of just banding together a lot of artists who all feel that violence is not a means to an end for them to any solution, and more to the point that in our way through our art we could express a feeling of hope, of faith, of perhaps some joy in the world, that we can have peace in our time through celebrating our diversity, our differences, rather than making enemies from them.
Graham thinks that the vigil is much more than an anti-war event.
For some, that's what it will be about. That's the beauty of the diversity of all the different people that are performing, more than 60, 70 different folks. And the beauty of our planet, as you know, Mike, is the way people in general have their own viewpoints. So all of these artists will be expressing it in their way. For some, it will be an anti-war protest. For another, it'll just be a prayer of peace and healing and protection for our planet. To each their own. For me, it's about peace, protection, and healing of our planet. For Terry Riley, it's something different. For Utah Phillips, the other two organizers, for each of them, it's something different for them. And I think it'll be political for some and totally non-political for others.
I asked Mikhail Graham about his view of the role of art and music in politics and social change.
Throughout my life on this planet so far, I've seen music be a very big driving force. Art, the spoken word, the written word, it always has an impact. It does change the world because it creates the space for change within the people that are participating and listening. I mean, listen to Lennon's Give Peace a Chance. What did that do? One little phrase that just simply encapsulates it all. For me, art is about truth. If it's real art in the sense that where you feel it, you maybe brings a tear or a smile to your face or who knows what, it does have a real powerful social effect.
One of the most underreported stories in the United States is the number of people who are against any war with Iraq and are actively working to advocate for peace. At the same time, President Bush has announced that the new U.S. military strategy will include preemptive strikes against anyone that it perceives as its enemies. Former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, who was also the United States representative to the United Nations, discusses how other countries around the world will view the Bush first strike policy.
I think the rest of the world will see that as a horrible precedent. Because what's already happening is that Russia is talking about preempting in Georgia. We don't know how others might see it. I also don't think it's necessary. And I just think as a precedent, I think it's very, it's dangerous. That's my own feeling about it.
When it comes to the issue of war with Iraq, many voices and viewpoints are being heard. One of those that is almost always left out of the debate, however, is the voice of working men and women in America. Richard Monhay is a special projects coordinator for the Midwest region of the Union Unite.
One of the things that's going on is that in the last 2 years, the U.S. has lost over 10 million jobs, and 2 years before that lost over 7 million jobs. And there's a tremendous amount of insecurity with, you know, the price of medical care. And really, the war with Iraq is not really foremost in the minds of the workers. One of the things that's overwhelming is the economic situation. And I've been in negotiations, and there's a lot of discussion about the war with Iraq and the economic situation, which dominates everywhere in the Midwest. There is a lot of discussion about the threat of to national security, and the thinking of the American people that I can tell from workers, average workers in the Midwest, is that there's no threat. There's nobody storming the shores and on the West Coast or the East Coast, and people feel that there's a tremendous amount of distraction. Plus, there's a considerable amount of concern about the amount of money from the budget that would go to such a war. The Wall Street Journal had an article that said that the war with Iraq would cost around $200 billion. And that's probably just the first part. Occupying and all the things that would take place over the next several years to consolidate the situation, there would be more money, and who pays those taxes? There's a tremendous amount of insecurity, and people are looking for something to hold on to, some kind of protection for their jobs, some kind of protection for their wages. One of the major issues in this country is health care. It predominates everything. Every negotiation, every organizing drive deals with the issue of the growing health care costs, prescription drugs, and the ability to make payments. It seems like the situation that seniors face today, and that is whether they pay for their prescription drugs or their rent or their food, is filtering down very rapidly to employed workers.
The Labor Party was formed in the United States to advocate for the needs and rights of working people. Monhay says that the Labor Party is poised to play an important role.
The Labor Party can play an incredible role. It must take the sympathy or the insecurity people feel and channel that towards making some dramatic changes in this country and organizing the fight to make those changes to provide the kind of health care that the American people deserve, having built this country over the last several hundred years. Everything you see is built by workers, and yet there's 50 million workers without health care. And our Midwest region is a component part of the Labor Party, and we're aggressively pursuing organizing and making people aware of the Labor Party and its goals towards just health care. I don't think there's ever been a time I know of in history that where we face the kind of conditions that we face today. In talking about war, when we entered the war in Vietnam, it was in the middle of immense prosperity, economic boom in this country. There was a lot of security, economic security. And today we have the exact opposite situation where we don't have the budget, we don't have the money, and we don't have the security for the workers. And I think this is going to lead to incredible turmoil, which creates an incredible amount of opportunity to organize workers and to put forward an agenda that is in the interest of the working and poor people of this country.
Finally, former UN weapons inspector Scott Ritter has written a book entitled Endgame, Solving the Iraqi Crisis Once and for All.
No one in the world supports this war. No one buys into the rhetoric of the Bush administration. Without a coalition, we probably shouldn't be thinking of waging this war. So if we're talking coalition building, that means that we have to, you know, deal with Iraq on a framework that's acceptable to the majority of the world. And in this case, we're talking Security Council resolutions that call for Iraq's disarmament. The world's already agreed to this. Iraq is ready to let the inspectors in, but Iraq wants assurances that the inspectors won't be used as they were in the past as a vehicle for espionage to spy on Saddam Hussein, that the inspectors will only do disarmament. And once you disarm Iraq, then the agreement is that you lift economic sanctions. These sanctions have been imposed on Iraq for over a decade now. Hundreds of thousands of innocents have perished, and the Iraqi economy is devastated. So lift the sanctions, and then with Iraq in control of its economy, Iraq can begin the long, difficult process of rebuilding its nation, and in doing so, be welcomed back into the family of nations. That is a policy that the world will support. It's a policy that is good for Iraq, good for the region, good for the United States, except for one aspect. It doesn't solve the political problem here in the United States of Saddam Hussein. We've boxed ourselves into a rhetorical corner where the only solution for Saddam is his elimination, and our politicians are unwilling or unable to step forward and embrace any solution, no matter how realistic it is, if it involves Saddam's continued survival.
That's it for this edition of PTR. People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League advocates for a cooperative society with social and economic justice for all. If you'd like more information about the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, you can contact us by calling 1-800-691-6888, 1-800-691-6888, or on the internet at www.lrna.org. My name is Mike Thornton, and on behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, we invite you to join us next time for another edition of People's Tribune Radio.